right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour, but there is quite a bit going on in the world of sports, especially here locally. We head towards the first college football game day of the week. Hoosiers host Southern Illinois on the weekend. 4 o'clock is the kickoff for that. But we also have basketball news. Of course, we spoke last week about Emmett Holt and Thomas Bryant being cited for underage possession of alcohol. It would have been the second time Emmett Holt was in the news. Well, he's in the news today again, as the basketball program has removed him from the team. He is no longer with the team, and Thomas Bryant will be receiving some additional discipline of his own. So that is the big news right now, is that Emmett Holt is no longer on the IU basketball team. And so we've connected here with Zach Osterman, the beat writer for both Indiana basketball and football of the Indianapolis Star, of course. At Zach Osterman is his Twitter handle. And Zach, thanks for joining us. Busy day all of a sudden, huh?
Yeah, it got busy here at the end, so thanks for having me on.
We appreciate your time, my friend, and we know with this ongoing saga, the last time Dave and I did radio was Wednesday, and then the tailgate tour was Thursday in Indianapolis, and from multiple reports, including your own, it was a Tom Crean that not a lot of people have seen, perhaps in public. It seemed that this decision was weighing heavily on him. Let's start the timeline back there before we get to today. Tell us your feelings and thoughts of what you saw last Thursday, and if it was any precursor leading to today's events.
Well, he was very frank, very blunt. The word that I, basic, but the word I kept coming back to was raw. And these events, for those who don't know, and you guys probably do, are essentially just sort of glorified pep rallies. They're meant to just kind of get everybody energized about IU athletics, and obviously this one being timed so close to football was kind of meant to be, at least in part, a gear up to football season. And, you know, when Crean usually does these, he's very energetic. He jokes around a lot. And there was none of that this time. It was a very sort of supplicating speech that he made, and really said a lot of the same things to the media that he said to donors and fans that were there. So, I mean, he wasn't holding anything back in that regard. He roundly criticized the team's leadership, and that was kind of a top-to-bottom thing. He questioned some of his past decisions. He brought up, I think specifically, he said, you know, if I could go back and do it again, maybe I would remove Hunter Perea from the team immediately after his DUI in February of last year, OWI. He took responsibility himself for you know, his player behavior. I mean, he really kind of left no stone that he could reach unturned in terms of kind of trying to lay bare all the issues he sees in his program right now. People asked me, and I said that if you asked me which way the wind's blowing, and this was last week, on whether or not there would be anybody removed from the team for the Emmett Holt Thomas Bryant situation, I said I thought the wind was blowing toward everybody staying, but I really wasn't sure at all. But I do think that Crean left basically every option open for himself with his words and how tough he was. I mean, he even said something to the effect of, Emmett should have never had one of my freshmen in that kind of situation. I think the implication being that team leaders, even if it's just a sophomore, guys who are more experienced essentially need to be showing the young kids how to be smart about things and how to stay out of trouble. And so, you know, is today surprising? I think, again, I'm not sure anything was off the table based on just how frank and upfront Tom Crean was last week.
Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star joining us tonight. And, Zach, do you get the sense that this decision is something that is part of maybe a new policy for Indiana basketball or Indiana athletics at all? Is this a reaction to an individual situation? Has something changed? As he mentioned, he would have done something maybe different with the Hunter Perea situation. Has he changed something in that regards going forward, do you think?
Well, I think it's hard to say whether or not something's changed for Crean going forward. Obviously, I don't think anyone would make the case that he taken in a vacuum either of these citations is nearly as serious as operating a vehicle while intoxicated for any number of reasons. I just got a phone with Frank Glass a little while ago, and he said that he did not feel that this was essentially that he felt that this decision was made based on reasonable conversation, you know, that essentially nobody kind of let their emotions dictate how they approached the decision. And he felt like Indiana stayed true to, it has a more formal name, but what is essentially Indiana's student athlete code of conduct, which does lay out at least some guidelines and procedures for different kinds of infractions, severity, nature of infraction, you know, I think even sort of whether or not it's a repeat offense, that kind of thing. And I know that Fred Glass, who said it was Tom's decision, that he supports it fully. But he said he feels like it is also consistent with more or less, if you've never read this thing, it's essentially a handbook that tells athletes, in part at least, how they're expected to behave, what is expected of them behavior-wise, character-wise, those kinds of things. And he feels like it's consistent with that as well. So I wouldn't say this is some dramatic shift. In fact, I know Fred Glass has said to me before, and he said today as well, that he doesn't really believe in zero-tolerance policies. He thinks that those too often produce results that nobody really wants. But I do know that this, or I am confident in saying this is a decision that was not made hastily or emotionally. It's a decision that, as much as IU has procedures for making it, they were followed, and I think everybody's ready to stand behind it.
Zach Osterman's our guest. He's the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers football and men's basketball team at theindystar.com, at Zach Osterman. How much of the decision-making in the end, in your opinion, if you have one, was this, as you mentioned, that you take this incident by itself, maybe doesn't look that way, but now you've got the president involved, and we've known and heard over the years that he doesn't really have a whole heck of a lot to do with athletics, and that's not his purview. He lets lets the people in the athletics handle that. Did his influence in maybe his email or his tenor at his speech the other week, did that trickle down through any of this? When obviously his subordinates are hearing that message loud and clear?
Well, you know, I think it's hard to say for sure. Again, it's something that Fred Glass, he really sort of stood firm on this position, that it was something that he felt like the decision was made not based on outside influences or anything like that, but based on how it should have been made, how it would have been made in under any circumstances. I mean, I do think it's fair, you know, to sort of point to, one, the fact that you had two men's basketball players dismissed in May for what are perceived to be sort of second offenses, and two, what Tom Crean himself said last week. He said that, you know, in retrospect about Hunter Perea and how tough he was, that language he used regarding him, Holt, that, you know, maybe if nothing else, there is sort of a feeling, it maybe even irrespective of Michael McRobbie's comments, like it's not just sort of the crime anymore and the severity of the crime that you have to consider, but the part of the message, I guess, that Crean and his staff want to get across to their players and to their roster is that there is a larger picture here, and you've got to be able to see that when you're considering your own behavior or looking out for your teammates and being considerate of their behavior and keeping an eye on them. You've got to understand that none of this happens in a vacuum. You are an IU men's basketball player. That comes with a heavy burden, certainly publicly. It's also something that is, you're always in the spotlight, even more so now, given everything that's happened in the last year and a half or so. But I think that almost this feeling of, I'm not saying these guys got punished harder just because they're the latest to do it, but that everybody needs to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, this just can't continue. That it's not; these aren't isolated incidents, and they won't be taken.
But see, that's the interesting. Chicken and the egg argument there. It has to stop, but we're not going to do anything different if it continues. So what should fans expect for the next one? Because sadly, we know there's going to be a next one. Have they added anything to this code of conduct? Has there been a memo or anything released saying now we have to look at these things a little bit harder because of the past transgressions that have gotten us to this point?
To my knowledge, no. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a formally announced change to the way the procedures or whatever you want to say that that specifically lays out. I think it's going to continue to be something that is kind of taken as the letter as it already is.
Talking to Zach Osterman, the beat writer for IU basketball and IU football for the Indianapolis Star. At Zach Osterman is his Twitter handle. And Thomas Bryant in the car. There are rumors of other people, both with and without the program, in the car. I don't know if there's anything you can speak to about that. But also looking at Thomas Bryant, they say there's going to be some discipline. Have they given any indication what that discipline might look like and if that's going to involve games?
I'm guessing stairs and a trash can to get started with. And then after that, we'll see who dresses, I would guess, for the first games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the impression I got from this. I mean, and if you're looking at just kind of the specific wording, it's internal team discipline and it's subject to additional discipline for any future failure to live up to his responsibilities to the program. My presumption is that means more or less it's going to kind of be handled in-house, it's going to be handled internally. I think if you're talking about, again, kind of grading or looking at and saying first offense, second offense, severity of offense, things like that, I think you probably see, you know, this offense itself, I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but it's not the most serious transgression. And the difference in the two situations from Thomas Bryant and Holt is that Holt, this is by no means his first level of involvement, whereas obviously this is Thomas Bryant's first. And I think even Fred Glass said to me, he also mentioned that you know, it's up to someone like Emmett Holt to not just keep himself out of trouble, but make sure that he's showing freshman teammates, young teammates, guys that don't have the lay of the land yet, to essentially show them how to stay out of trouble themselves.
Well, to be fair, Emmett didn't have a very good start on that in his own accord.
No, but he also, I think, the argument on the other side is he got and I'm not advocating for one position or the other, just to be clear, but I think the argument on the other side is he got a pretty harsh lesson in that very quickly in college.
Well, and that was what we talked about last week. You know, my stance, and I can take the stance, is that, you know, when you've got something that's life-threatening to go through the first time around with a friend of yours, with a teammate of yours, and you don't learn, then the second offense becomes more serious. Have they given you any sense that this is a two strikes and you're out situation and policy, or if it's simply, you know, each one can be looked at separately, and because Emmett Holt went through that, the second one meant a lot more than maybe it would if Thomas Bryant gets busted twice for having alcohol in his hand?
I mean, there's no sense that it is two strikes and you're out. And I do think, you know, I mean, again, Glass also did mention that specifically to me, that Holt was someone who had been through a very serious, very traumatic kind of incident. Obviously, you know, he had been drinking. He wasn't drunk, but he had been drinking. And essentially, if that kind of didn't, you know, to sort of lean on a cliche, if that didn't wake him up, if that didn't really get his attention, then what was going to, I think, was part of the question. I don't think that everybody's in a two strikes and you're out situation. I think there is still always going to be a level of evaluating any future incident based on its own merits and details and severity.
We've talked about the individuals. What about from a team standpoint? Did Fred mention that Indiana basketball, men's basketball, is being looked at differently because they've had multiple incidents, like individual players have had multiple incidents? Or is the next time the kid from tennis that gets popped, is he...
Oh, because the football team's had some issues in the last year, too.
Sure, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. Are those teams under any sort of pressure or different circumstances than or is it still 24 sports, one policy?
Well, I mean, I think at least to a degree, basketball is always going to be a little bit different. I mean, I don't think that's a... We didn't discuss that specifically, Fred Glass and I, tonight, but I think that just my personal sort of view as somebody who's lived in this town for 10 years, more or less, is that basketball is always going to be a little bit different, and that revenue-generating sports in general will always have a brighter spotlight on them, and that ultimately part of what you have to preach to players is that they have to be more careful, maybe even than some of their teammates who are not quite in the public eye. And I think that that's only enhanced when you've gone through some of the things off the court that the men's basketball program has gone through the last year to year and a half. I just think ultimately, again, it's not something anybody flat out stated, but I think that basketball players certainly, and even football players to a degree, and maybe some other more prominent sports, not just in Indiana, but, you know, women's basketball at Tennessee, for example, then soccer at Indiana,
are always going to kind of live under a little bit more of a microscope, and you've got to get athletes to understand that from the get-go, because the reality is when incidents like this happen, they're going to draw a lot more attention, and if you don't have them ready for it, then, you know, what happens?
Kevin Wilson has stated that he handles all his discipline internally. Why does basketball have to handle theirs differently? Is that a program choice? Wilson was asked, hey, what about Griffiths? What about Green? Mm-hmm. He says, hey, anything we're going to do, we're handling that internally. Any reason the shift to there?
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting, and to be honest, just the way things have kind of piled up, I haven't gotten a chance to ask Kevin about this, but he has announced suspensions before publicly. I know he has. Why he's choosing to not announce them, or whether or not they're even going to happen in these cases with Isaac Griffiths, with Ralph Green, who both had sort of off-season incidents, run-ins with the law, I'm not sure. But I know basketball has more or less always, nearly always, to my knowledge anyway, had a policy of announcing when discipline has been happening and when what specifically has been going on. Again, I can't guarantee you that every single time a player has been suspended, it's been announced under Mike Davis and Kelvin Sampson and Tom Crean and whoever. But I mean, I think at some level it can be personal preference. And I think, again, if you just come back to it, I don't think IU men's basketball, you can really get away with that, frankly. I think it's just the spotlight is not brighter anywhere in the athletics community in Bloomington than it is on IU basketball.
And speaking of that then, too, you know, in this day and age, Twitter, you know, texting, everything, everybody's got to have an answer yesterday as to what you're going to do. This is almost a week and a half to come to a final decision, including the first week of actual classes for the students and the athletes also. Any idea, any sense, any word as to what they were doing with this for a week? Or was Monday when this all kind of came out publicly, was that the first time they knew about it?
I don't know whether it was the first time they knew about it or not. I'd frankly be a little bit surprised if it was. But something Fred Glass, he said this to me tonight, and he said this before, because obviously, I mean, we've discussed this at various times throughout our professional relationship, you know, just sort of athlete behavior and discipline. He has always sort of preached essentially never rushing into decisions and always wanting to take at least a little bit of time to say, you know, more, if nothing else, to say that decisions were never made emotionally. They were never made when temperatures were running a little bit hot. I think Fred himself likes to take an opportunity to sort of sit down and really digest everything in a situation like this. And I think that he likes to have everyone else involved in the process go through that as well, so that when it's time to meet and discuss and determine, nobody's making a decision from an emotional place. And again, I think this, I believe him when he says this was Tom Crean's decision, but I also believe that Fred Glass will, in a situation like this, probably tell Tom Crean, I don't want to talk about this immediately. I want us all to kind of decompress. Because ultimately, if you do kind of make those decisions too rapidly, I do understand that point. And I understand why fans want to see more decisive action, but ultimately, it's the end of August, so I don't know what's gained by making a decision last Tuesday as opposed to today, but what can be lost maybe is the ability to step back from the situation and really, at least as dispassionately as you can, assess everything that's on the table and what the right course of action should be.
And looking at this practically for on the court eventually, you lose Emmett Holt. Thomas Bryant is going to have some sort of discipline. We don't know if that's a suspension or not. You know, long term here throughout the entire season,
front court attrition.
Suddenly they've got front court depth, but this obviously, you know, takes a little bit out of the depth for the rest of the season. How does it affect them?
Well, I mean, I think number one, you're going to need a lot more early from Max Bielfeldt, and this is just if we're talking about, you know, what's going on the court now. Number two, you're going to have to hope probably that Juwan Morgan is a little bit more ready, can accelerate or flatten his learning curve a little bit. And number three, you know, whatever kind of punishment Thomas Bryant may or may not receive in terms of playing time, you're going to have to hope that he can play a couple, three more minutes tonight, because, I mean, this was a perceived strength for Indiana last season, or at least last, you know, I mean, tax day 2015, you had Thomas Bryant coming in. You had Devin Davis believed to be coming back. I'm not really sure if he's been cleared yet or not down at his junior college in Texas. You had Hunter Perea coming back. You had Emmett Holt coming back. And you said, hey, this is a really beefed up front court. Now, I think it's a good front court, don't get me wrong, and I think it can be very good. But now you are looking suddenly at a very different, you know, you don't necessarily just have the strength in numbers there that you did even, you know, at the beginning of May or even, frankly, at the beginning of Welcome Week.
Hal Morton is adding Max Bielfeld right now to this team, given all of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and at the same time, you're going to have to pile more on him. And grad transfers, I think sometimes we expect more out of them than we should, just because the reality is that they're still coming in like a freshman in terms of learning systems and playing styles and teammates' preferences and all those sorts of things. So I think the reality is that it's not going to be any easier for him than it would be in a lot of ways for a freshman. He's just
he's played in the league. He understands the speed of the game, the physicality of the game. He'll be increasingly ahead of the curve there. Indiana added a guard, Newkirk, here just a couple 10 days ago. Late. Now there's another open spot. Is this something that Indiana wants to fill now, or you just say, hey, let's take care of that down the road?
Well, I don't want to misspeak too much, but I do not believe you would be able to do that at this point.
Because the school year has started, right?
You can't get too far into school. Yeah.
I think if I'm remembering everything correctly, you need to have somebody enrolled in classes by the first day of the second week of school,
which would have been today.
So unless something is going on basically overnight behind the scenes, and I'm talking about has already gone on that I'm not privy to, which I don't believe anything is, because nothing could really come together that quickly.
How late is the admissions office open?
As late as they want.
If I remember in the basically the procedure,
get the judge to sign the warrant.
Too late. It is too late.
So people dreaming about adding someone at this time just by law can't happen. Let's just leave it at that. That makes more sense.
Yes.
Zach Osterman's our guest this afternoon. He is the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, Indiana men's basketball and football. You can find him at Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com. There's a football game, believe it or not, coming up this Saturday.
Actual game.
Coach Wilson spoke today. For people who didn't get to catch up with that, give us a quick 90-second summation of what we might have missed.
Really not a ton. I mean, in terms of injuries and sort of changes to the roster, anything like that, there's not a lot that was really announced today. And Indiana is, I think, more or less beyond what we already kind of knew about. Donovan Clark, Jayshon Harris, walk-on DB named Garrett Welch, another walk-on Ty Smith, obviously the son of Tracy Smith. That's kind of the infirmary at this point, at least I think among guys that really are likely to be in that two deep, maybe even 2.5 to 3 deep range. So I think Indiana's more or less going to be healthy going in. You know, Southern Illinois, a good FCS team, a 1AA, whatever you want to call that level of competitive
1AA, the traditional say 1AA.
In college, kind of a balanced team. They do return a fifth-year quarterback. I think that they'll at least give Indiana a little bit of a test in that young secondary. But, you know, you look at it, and on paper, there's a lot of reasons why Indiana should be fairly comfortable with this weekend and not a lot why they shouldn't.
Yeah, no, don't forget, about 10 years ago, they actually won here.
Yes, they did. 2006.
They've got a little victory on their docket. Zach Osterman, thanks for joining us tonight.
We appreciate
all the information. Again, that's Zach Osterman, the beat writer for Indiana football and basketball with the Indianapolis Star. At Zach Osterman is his Twitter handle. Zach, thanks a lot for coming on tonight. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, man, we'll talk.
And we've got to take a quick break.
We do. The spaceship is raring to go. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But thank you again to Zach.
Yeah,
we'll take a long break here because he was with us a long time there. But we'll be back to talk about Emmett Holt being dismissed from the IU basketball team this afternoon. Back in just a couple minutes. David Glass with you in the zone. right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Quick programming note, we got Reds, Reds baseball coming up at the bottom of the hour. Actually, top of the hour, top of the next hour, 8 o'clock. Let's start over. Reds and Cubs here on the airwave, 8 o'clock tonight. Schwarber facing the Reds for you IU fans out there. Thank you again to Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star for joining us tonight, talking about the release late this afternoon. You can go to IndyStar.com and see his article updated now for his conversation and comments with Fred Glass. We will read the statement that was originally released by the program. Sophomore Emmett Holt has been dismissed from the men's basketball program effective immediately for demonstrating exceptionally poor judgment in the circumstances surrounding his recent citation, particularly coming after his involvement in the Devin Davis accident, which should have motivated him to make better decisions. Freshman Thomas Bryant, as a result of his citation, is receiving internal team discipline and is subject to additional discipline for any future failure to live up to his responsibility to the program. There you go. Some interesting comments, though, that Zach got from from Fred Glass, rather. Said it was Tom's decision. We obviously had conversations and took some time to get this right, so that would be why it took almost 10 days to put something out. He made it clear to Zach that he does not advocate a zero-tolerance policy with regard to athlete conduct. He said the decisions, the punishments were consistent with the code of conduct effectively here. I'm not a fan of zero tolerance. I think it creates an easy way out and can end up with a result that nobody really wants. Our student-athlete code of conduct calls on us to address things on a case-by-case basis. That's what we'll continue to do. That's Fred Glass speaking. So there you go. Doesn't sound like a change of policy. Sounds like they went off of what they believe the policy to allow them, and clearly took into strong consideration what had happened last year. And I used the word over and over, life-threatening. If you go through one of those, I don't know what else is going to get your attention.
It's less than a year. We argued last week if this was his senior year and he did something his freshman year, yeah, you're going to look at it a little differently. Mm-hmm. You'd hope that wouldn't be the case, being smarter and smarter. But in the end, the decision, I wouldn't think surprised anybody. That was what we – I'm not going to put words in your mouth. That's what I said last week. That was the only decision that would have – because if you kept him, you had to explain why.
Right.
This is a great explanation after doing the right thing, in my opinion. If you would have kept him, I would have been very interested to have heard why.
Yeah.
That's not the case. So guess what? Flush that. Gone. Did the right thing.
Right.
Credit where credit is due. It's not an easy circumstance. These are kids' lives. These are their pride at stake. But they have to learn. Just as we said last week, and this horse I will beat forever, life is not a Hollywood movie. It does not always have a happy ending. You must make decisions.
Right.
You must make choices. And there are real-life consequences. You're not going to be, you're not going to be famous and rich forever.
Yeah.
Ask a lot of these NBA guys that don't do it. But the point is, Cody Zeller had the best point. He said, you have to be responsible for yourself.
Right.
That's number one. And if you don't get that, I have a hard time worrying about the rest of it.
Well, and I've said it, you know, coaches act, you know, for good or bad, they end up being a sort of a surrogate parent for a while. But they do not. They are not the parents. They do not have to have unending tolerance for things, even if they're small things, even if they're big things. I mean, they can... You know, I think the understanding is that it's not going to last forever. You don't have the right to play for him, the right to get that respect out of the coaches or the organization, and you don't have the right to play for the university if you keep doing those sorts of things. And I don't understand how, you know, ultimately you go through that and it doesn't get your attention at the very least. So from my standpoint, not a surprise. Said it last week. That was probably what could happen. The one scenario I came up with that I thought, and I don't know this because I don't know the circumstances, but if we remember, Emmett Holt was brought in at the last minute. He was going to be going to a prep school. He was brought in on a scholarship here. I don't know what discussions might have gone on with his family and guardians at the time and whether they, you know, they thought maybe a prep school would be the right way because he lacked maturity. Again, I'm throwing out a scenario here as to why you might have kept him around, because maybe he really did need to grow more than your average kid. But that said, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, he is off the team. And then with Thomas Bryant, I mean, let's look at this separately.
Thomas Bryant was Emmett Holt last year.
Except this, I mean, obviously this isn't a life-threatening situation.
Sure. It's still bad decision-making with an upperclassman that should have known better, and you heard the explanation. Absolutely right.
But with this, I mean, what opinions, what do you look at with Thomas Bryant? I mean, this is, like you said, it's got to be running in maybe half a game on an exhibition game, doesn't it? Because for him, there's nothing violent going on. There's no driving that we know of going on under the influence. It becomes a guy at college, a basketball player. We can't take that away. At college with alcohol in his possession. If you look at that one separately, and you can with Thomas Bryant, I think, at least you can try. I don't know that there's a lot of punishment that goes on with that other than, like you said, the physical stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
The best worst part, he was with Holt.
Yeah.
So you take it from there, and Thomas Bryant now has to be on double secret probation or whatever this is, because the next time he gets caught with alcohol, you say you've already been through that once.
Right.
Now, if the second time he gets caught with marijuana, you say,
and you watch your buddy get kicked off of the team too.
Sure. Well, then you get caught. Let's say he gets caught with marijuana next time. Mm-hmm. Well, you hit for the cycle before then. Oh, it's a little bit different. No, it's not. It's a legal substance that you're not allowed to have.
That's right.
So again, I understand you have to take it case by case. I understand that it stinks for the kids, but they have to understand that their actions do deem consequences. That's going to happen when they're 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever it is, down the road. And it's sad because it doesn't have to happen, and it's not good decision-making. That's the key. The danger they don't see. There's a reason why these activities are illegal, and the level of stupidity that goes along with this that has been glossed over a bit, I'm going to reinforce. That's the problem with me. It's stupidity 1 and alcohol 1A for me.
Again, the alcohol thing to me, as I've said before, is not that big a deal, but it is an offense.
How the law looks at it, I was told, was possession is the same as consumption, because they don't care. Yeah. You have it. You could have taken two sips.
Different if you're driving, because if you're not drinking,
exactly. So again, if you want to say, "Oh, they're just holding the liquor for their buddy," well, you can't do that. And who's your friend that makes you do that?
Here is another glasses comments from
Zach
Osterman.
Yeah, keep going with these, because these are important.
After that situation, he puts himself in a situation where he's subject to getting another alcohol-related citation, and during welcome week, and with a freshman on the basketball team. I took no joy in that, but I think we did the right thing. I'm not going to stand here and say this will never happen again. I hope it doesn't. We're doing everything we can to keep it from happening again. I would expect that we're getting people's attention, given that we've had very significant consequences for behavior that, taken in isolation, wouldn't merit being dismissed from the program. So there you go. It's not a two strike. It's not a three strike. It's not an any strike necessarily, but does certainly speak directly to the idea that the, as I called it, life-threatening situation he went through, if that doesn't get your attention, again, I don't know what will. And here's the issue. You mentioned it being dumb. It's extremely dumb. And the problem is, who's going to be responsible for the next dumb? And that's where Indiana says, no, it's not going to be us. And that's what it takes. I mean, as parents, anybody out there who's been a parent knows you got to up the consequences occasionally. And eventually it'll get their attention, and hopefully a lot of that will stop. I don't know if all of it will stop, but a lot of that will stop. And in this case, he'll go play basketball somewhere else, but he won't be able to do it at IU.
And we've heard for the last couple of years the message, and it hasn't stopped it from happening. I don't know what stops it. I don't know what's in that handbook that gets you to finally say, hey, that's enough. We're good. No more of that. Geez, they really mean business now. Well, now they've seen three of their teammates kicked off in how long? 4 months?
6 months, May, max.
May, June, July, August. Four and a half months. Not a long time. So if that doesn't get your attention, the sympathy factor goes out the window for me for the next one, especially someone who's already been in some trouble. You can't look at all this and say, I didn't know.
Right.
Oops. Doesn't work. Not anymore. Not here.
Nope.
Do that at Binghamton.
Nope.
Do that at Central Arkansas State.
Exactly.
Not here.
They can have that problem.
That's right.
They can
and they'll probably
accept East Tennessee State.
There you go. They can have you.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone. We're back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. You're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming notes. We've got Reds baseball tonight, 8 o'clock, as they are in Chicago. Kyle Schwarber, IU catcher and left fielder for the Cubs, is, bombs, of course, tearing it up.
Bombs.
So you can hear him play the Reds.
He threw that no-hitter last night. Did you hear that?
Absolutely.
He did. It was great.
Fantastic.
It's unbelievable to have him pitch.
Tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi, 6 o'clock. He'll have Jeremy Gray talking about the IU fan experience over at IU football. Also have Spider Miller, local celebrity, and the Walker Cup captain.
He is.
2017, yes?
No.
16?
He'll be gone in 10, 5, 8, 6 days.
Oh, soon.
Over to
sooner than I thought.
Royal Lytham and St. Anne's as he gets the Walker Cup ready. Walker Cup is the amateur version of the Ryder Cup, where the U.S. takes on Great Britain and Ireland as opposed to all of Europe, but it's one of the oldest amateur competitions around, and a great honor for Spider, obviously local resident here and big time in the golf world. So impressive. Saw some pictures from his team tweeted out from Arnold Palmer's office today.
Very
so
nice.
When the king talks, you Liz.
Absolutely.
And he knows a little about that. For those of you who have been listening throughout the day, Coach Kevin Wilson was supposed to join us tomorrow. Instead, he will join us a week from tomorrow. So we'll get a first week in the books talk with him a week from tomorrow night with Sports Talk at Yogi. So good stuff there.
Of course, we'll be back 6 o'clock on Wednesday.
We call that the football show.
Absolutely. And then Thursday night, we've got football. Colts in Cincinnati for the final preseason game, 6 o'clock.
Colts roster moves today. Donald Thomas, they have finally had enough. They're not going to wait on him to get healthy. It's been too long. We'll save them upwards of $4 million with the cap moving him at this time. By Saturday at 4 o'clock, I believe, Dave, is the 53-man roster. None of the big players are going to play Thursday night, but this is for folks who enjoy the guts of football. These are guys fighting for jobs.
That's right.
These are guys maybe down the road in your fantasy team, a last pick where a guy falls in love with, hey, Andrew Luck's got a new fullback option, tight end option.
This is about making the roster.
It is, and it's kind of like its own reality show, and we'll have it for you. Notice the start time, too, on Thursday. 6 p.m. Thursday for a 7 o'clock kickoff, so your money will probably move to the weekend on that as well. But the Colts were in St. Louis on the weekend, and that was the most work they were going to get. We knew that going into the game. Didn't look terrible, didn't look great. I thought they were a little bit better than average, and you just saw pieces of the puzzle coming together, in my opinion. You saw Hilton get deep, catch a ball. Sure, he was out of bounds, still made a great catch.
Yeah, sure.
Andre Johnson doing Andre Johnson things. You had guys, pass protection looked decent, wasn't the best ever.
No, it wasn't
running
bad.
Game was solid. Defense was a little bit better. Mike Adams blew a coverage. But again, the final dress rehearsal before the official start, I think on the whole, they're moving in the right direction.
Well, what I took out of it was, I wouldn't say a lot of stellar, but I would say not a lot of ugly, I think is the best way I could put it.
Or
not a lot of mistakes.
Going, geez, what's going
exactly.
on there?
Exactly. You know, you're without a player here or a player there, Greg Toler. You know, it'll be interesting to see long term.
He's week to week now. He's not day to day. There's a difference in
that's a different one. And, and he frustrates people partly because he's getting looked at about, you know, on the other side of Vontae Davis, which means two things. One, you got a Pro Bowler that you're getting compared to. And two, because of that, you're getting a lot more looks than Vontae Davis
has.
He has
two things. He makes the spectacular look spectacular and the easy a disaster.
Yeah.
He gives you all great, knocks down three passes in a row, then gets scared to tackle
again. He's a lot better cornerback than I think some people will give him credit for. But he's, you know, we've got some decent depth at that spot, but it's going to test
He's guilty by association with Davis.
That's exactly
so
right.
Let's let him get healthy first. That's the key.
And the safeties are nice players, but they are not at this moment, they are not big game changers. So when you're missing another guy at that corner spot, you know, you got to keep an eye on that sort of thing.
Remember, the last game changer the Colts had back there was Bob Sanders.
And Bethea.
Bethea was a solid pro.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sanders was a defensive MVP.
Up front, you haven't had a chance to see Nate Irving yet. I'd be surprised if he doesn't make the roster. He was a pickup they wanted to keep around. But on the defensive line, what's interested me there in particular is that the two kids from Stanford, both drafted,
good,
Perry
smart,
and Henderson, they play them a lot.
They do.
They have been. I mean, this is when you start to see the rotations. I mean, Clayton Gathers is really playing that dime linebacker as a safety. He gets in there quite a bit in those situations too. So these are the guys that they're going to rotate quite a bit of the linemen. And they like Anderson and Perry in some pass situations. Not that they're going to be enormous pass rushers necessarily, but that they're solid enough and they're hard to move in the middle of that defensive line that they're going to at least take up a blocker or two, and that'll free up your actual pass rusher. So they like those two guys. They released Jarris Pendleton today, who played a little bit for him last year. Wide receiver, you know, still yet to see. Is Daron Carter going to make this roster, or are you still looking at the Griff Whalen experience?
Colts fans, you've got T.Y. Hilton,
oh yeah,
Andre Johnson, both the tight ends, And who else am I missing from the receiving corps?
Dante Moncrief.
That's it.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. Philip Dorsett.
Stop.
Yeah, exactly.
The guys you're talking about are whenever a guy pulls a hamstring or gets knocked, gets his bell rung, gets sore.
Here's the thing about Dante Moncrief that I'm very impressed by. This is a guy who only played a couple years of college.
Right. He was only 20 when he was drafted.
Exactly. He's a young guy. He's used to being the man everywhere he goes. Now, all of a sudden, he's in a crowded locker room with a brand new number one pick and a brand new veteran brought in the door. It'd be real easy for him to sulk and have it get into his head. He had a really good game the other night. And so he's got real potential in the NFL long term if he keeps his head in the game. And he should learn from Andre Johnson and T.Y. Hilton, but hopefully he does.
He's not as big as Johnson, but he's not a one-trick pony either.
No, he's 6'3", 220, 210.
He's not as thick as Johnson is. But if you can go over the middle, if you can play in the slot, and if you can run deep routes.
Fast, he can jump.
Well, it's hard to, and they're not cutting Moncrief. That's not my point. My point is that gives you another that's why I stopped at Moncrief. You get to those three and you're good.
Right.
Dorsett, you bring him in the game. They immediately have to know where in the field is. That opens up the entire passing game for the rest of them. Fleener was out with an ankle problem. That should be fine by the time you get to it. Arthur Jones went out. You hope that's not a high ankle sprain,
but
that's going to bother you a little
bit.
That
one's a little different because that's the guy, again, you're hoping and projecting he's going to be one of your difference makers, and to lose him for a while could be a real problem. But we will see. Khalid Holmes has solidified himself at center.
Chuck Pagano said
they named
that today.
Him.
That's
a starter. He's really played that well. Jonathan Harrison, when he was in there, was a disaster. So the whole offensive line was a disaster when he was in there. So I'm not sure that's not designed that way or happened that way because of him. But Khalid
again,
Holmes has been solid.
You still need to have players who can come in and pick it up. How many times have you seen an offensive line go 16 games and not have any problems, especially the Colts?
I'm not certain the two guards are set in stone. I think they'll start with those guys, and they want them to be the guys, but I still see a little slow afoot from both of them. We'll see if there's changes to that. I don't know that we've got the guys to make those changes.
That's the other issue. You have the cards you're dealt. You're going to be running guys on the taxi squad in and out. You hope you find a guy like Wrights who can help you for 20 snaps a game. That's it. Not 20 starts, 20
Hopefully
snaps.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's. But you got to have a guy in that role because guys get hurt all the time.
Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Wednesday, 6 o'clock, and we'll do IU preview as they face Southern Illinois 4 o'clock on Saturday. So we'll talk all about that on Wednesday. You've been in the zone.